You're listening to The Jackie Price Show on Blog Talk Radio, Buffalo.
Hi, I'm Jackie. Welcome to the show tonight. I'd like to thank you so much for stopping by and spending time with me. I'm here in downtown Buffalo, broadcasting from my home studio, and fall is definitely in the air. You know, I didn't get to the gym today, but I did walk around my neighborhood, and it was quite chilly out. I did enjoy the summer this year, and no matter how hot it got, I did not complain because living here on the East Coast, especially Buffalo, well, we know what's coming. Did you get a chance to see the super moon eclipse Sunday night and Monday? People from around the world posted pictures online of the eclipse. I was on a late night flight from New York City to Buffalo, and I got home around 1:30 in the morning, and I had a fantastic view of the moon from my parking lot. And also once I get into my place, the living room and bedroom window, the moon was like right there. There was like a circle of rainbow colors around the moon. Very pretty. If you're a spiritual person and into the metaphysical side of life, this was a very powerful full moon, and the energy is still very strong. You know, people who are into the astrological movements of the planets and things of this sort, they've said that this moon is a moon of endings and manifestation. You know, sometimes things and situations, they just run their course, and you have to know when it's time to stop holding on. Part of it is love, love for yourself. Self-love is so important. When you let go of what no longer works, you begin to recover. And just know that your hopes and dreams are right in front of you. You got to go for them. I have a question for you. Would you forgive your children if they attacked you? Well, Yvonne and Zachary Irvine are the parents of the two boys who tried to murder them earlier this month. The incident was all over the news and the internet. It happened near Atlanta, Georgia. Now, the two boys are 17 and 22, and they brutally attacked their parents in their home on September 5th, just a few weeks ago. According to the mother, I guess she was able to escape, and she called 911. They put Xanax in their food, and when they thought that their parents were asleep, they attacked them. They beat them up, they tried to strangle them, and they severely stabbed the father. But the couple survived, and they told ABC News that they have scars, but they're healing. And they forgive their boys, because this is totally out of character for them. They've never been in any type of trouble or violence. They have issues with cleaning their rooms, but nothing that would indicate anything like this. And Mr. Irving continued to say that their kids had one bad moment. Well, that's very loving parents to say these things and be that forgiving. I'm wondering if mental illness had a play in this, because one of the boys, he has confessed that he's been planning the attack since he was 11 years old. Now, the brothers are charged with two counts of felony aggravated assault and first-degree arson. Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention that they tried to burn the house down. Both will be tried as adults, and they could face as many as 60 years in prison if convicted. Wow, it's really, really a sad case here. You know, like my ex-associate used to say, trouble is easy to get into and hard to get out of. Okay, we are going to talk about domestic violence towards men tonight. Recently, an associate of mine told me that she saw an Asian woman physically abusing an Asian man. She was at the San Francisco International Airport, and the couple appeared to be arguing. Then the woman, she slapped him, and he did nothing. My associate was appalled, and she went to find airport personnel to tell them to call the cops. And guess what happened? The men that she approached, they started laughing about the situation, but they told her that they would call the cops. You know, this woman slapped her man in public. Can you imagine what she does to him behind closed doors? Now, if that situation had been the other way around and the man had slapped the woman, people wouldn't be laughing. They would have called the cops immediately and they would have run over to help her. I don't think it's funny when men are subjected to domestic violence from their wives or girlfriends, and that's why I'm doing a show on this subject. Have you ever heard of a television show called Snapped? It's a true crime television series that airs on the Oxygen Network about women who have committed murder or attempted murder. The program focuses on interviews with people who have firsthand knowledge of each case, including law enforcement officers, lawyers, journalists, friends and family members of both the victims and the accused, and at times the criminals themselves. There are some really nice men out here who stay involved with aggressive and violent women. And you wonder why, when there are so many beautiful women out here looking for a good man and who would be kind and loving towards them and treat them right. It boggles the mind. I know it boggles my mind. Here's a perfect example. In February of this year, the singer Ray J was beat up by his girlfriend after he went to a strip club. Now, most of the time when we hear about domestic violence, the woman is usually on the receiving end of the assault, but not in this case. The incident happened in New Orleans, and Ray J had been out with some TV producers, and they went to a strip club. When he returned to his hotel room, his girlfriend went ballistic, and she attacked him. Now, listen to what she did. She cracked several of his ribs, busted his lip open, and tore his ACL, which means that there was a tear in one of his knee ligaments that joins the upper leg bone with the lower leg bone. So Ray J, he was able to escape, and he ran out of the hotel room. And a hotel security guy saw him bleeding and called 911. The girlfriend was arrested and booked for domestic abuse and battery. And someone in the hotel told the cops that they heard her screaming that she was going to kill him. But guess what happened next? Ray J bailed her out of jail and paid $10,000 for her attorney. I'm speechless. I have nothing to say about that. If you're a man in an abusive relationship, it's important to know that you're not alone. It happens to men from all cultures and all walks of life. 1 in 3 victims of domestic violence are male. However, men are often reluctant to report abuse by women because they feel embarrassed, or they feel that they won't be believed, or worse, that police will assume that since they're male, they're the perpetrator of the violence and not the victim. Well, there's help here for you tonight. My guest tonight is Stanley Green. He's a member of the Stop Abuse for Everyone Speakers Bureau. He's the first male survivor of domestic violence in the United States to present the opening keynote at the Academic Professional Conference on Family Violence. Mr. Green appeared on the ABC News show 2020 they had a segment dealing with male victims who were, victims of domestic violence. He's appeared on Oprah's show, and he's been active as an advocate for male victims of domestic violence for more than 20 years. And now he's here. He's going to tell his story, and I want you to stay tuned because we're going to talk about abused men, the hidden side of domestic violence. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Jackie Price Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Create your future and start a career in radio and television broadcasting. The Connecticut School of Broadcasting is the nation's oldest and largest group of broadcasting schools. Their graduates have gone on to work at major television networks and radio stations like Clear Channel, ESPN, CNN, CBS Radio, Fox, MTV, and Sirius Radio. They have 12 campuses spanning the East Coast. Contact them today. In a few months, you could be working as a broadcasting professional at a radio station or television studio. Call the Connecticut School of Broadcasting today at 1-800-TV-RADIO.
You're listening to The Jackie Price Show on Blog Talk Radio, Buffalo.
Welcome back. I'm Jackie Price on Blog Talk Radio, and it's time for the BTR AccuWeather. The current temperature here in Buffalo is 59 degrees. Tomorrow, breezy with periods of sun and clouds with a high of 60, and tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low of 47 degrees. Okay, I'm back, and I'm not alone. Hello, Stanley. How are you?
Just fine. Good to talk with you, Jackie.
Oh, I'm so happy that you're here, and welcome to the Jackie Price Show.
Thank you.
Domestic violence against men is a very important issue that gets little recognition, and I want to thank you for this opportunity to hear your story of being a victim of domestic violence and becoming a survivor. So thank you so much, Stanley.
Well, I appreciate your helping to raise awareness of this issue.
Now, your abuser was your wife, correct?
Yes.
Okay. How did you meet her?
We met working together on the college newspaper.
Oh, okay. So, you met in college. How long
Right.
had you been married before the abuse started? And in what ways did the abuse start?
Well, I noticed we had known each other for close to 10 years before we got married, but
okay.
I noticed early in the marriage there were certain kinds of controlling behavior, such as if we were to have an argument, and I think it's normal for two strong-willed people to sometimes have arguments,
mm-hmm.
but if things weren't going her way in the argument, or if I felt like that maybe one or both of us weren't handling the argument well, I would say, I think we need to take time out. And she'd say, no, we're going to settle this. And if I tried to leave the room, she would block my egress. And, of course, I came to learn later that controlling another person's space or their access or egress from a space is actually a form of abuse. I knew it wasn't right. I just didn't have the vocabulary to identify it. And, of course, it didn't take me long to understand that when she said, we're going to settle this, that, quote, settle this meant for me to capitulate to whatever it was she wanted.
Yes. So I'm going to go back to when you were dating. Did you, when you look back now, Do you see any signs or no? Did she hide that pretty good until you got married?
Before we got married, I saw her as a person who had really strong, loyal friendships and good connections with family. So I didn't see this kind of controlling or manipulative behavior.
Okay. Now, what you just told us about the arguing, did the abuse escalate?
Yeah, over the years, there were additional incidents. The one that the first time I applied the concept or the term abuse to what was happening occurred several years into the marriage, and she had asked me to review an article that a friend of hers had submitted for a newsletter that my then-wife was helping to edit. So I was sitting at the computer reading this, and she asked me what I thought about it, and I gave her my opinion, and she vigorously disagreed with me, and I said, well, I feel this way because, and I had long hair then, and I was sitting in one of these office chairs that reclines. She grabbed my hair and pulled my neck back so I could hardly breathe, and if I were to lean back to try to straighten out my neck, I ran the risk of falling over backwards.
Mm.
When I got out of that situation, it was the first time that it dawned on me that what was happening to me was abuse.
Mm-hmm. So that was the very first time that she actually put her hands on you?
Well, I don't know if I would put it that way. It was just the first time that I used the label abuse.
Okay.
In my own head.
Okay. So what you're seeing...
There was another incident where she was upset because as she was asking me about different things to put on the grocery list, I would say, well, I need to go see if we need more of that. And she just started screaming and swearing. And at that time, our son was about 3 years old, just under 3 years old. And I didn't want him hearing that kind of language while he was developing language. Particularly, I didn't want him hearing it from an authority figure such as a parent. She came up to me and started hitting me on the, trying to hit me at the face and the chest, and I put my arms in front of me so that her blows wouldn't hit my face. And then I picked up our toddler son, and she blocked our egress out the front door. So I ran into the backyard and got to the back gate, and while holding a heavy toddler in one hand, I did the combination on the gate lock with the other hand, and this heavy padlock falls to the ground, and I run out into the alley. She catches up, picks up this heavy steel padlock, and hurls it at us. Now, if it had hit our son, it could have injured him badly, and I go running down the alley, and I can hear neighbors on the other side of the garden wall, and this is a very upper-middle-class neighborhood. By the way, that home, when I looked it up in 2007, was valued at $2.5 million. That was after we had left. But I could hear people saying, why is that woman screaming at that man? And I get about halfway down the long block, and I slow down because she couldn't catch up. And my son looks at me and says, Daddy, why mommy hit you?
Oh, no. Did you ever sustain injuries that sent you to the hospital, Stanley?
Yes. Well, injuries for which I sought medical treatment, I would put it that way.
Yes.
She had sent me out of town on a business trip for the medical corporation we owned. She was an obstetrician, gynecologist. I have a master's of engineering, and we owned a medical practice. And I had gone out of town to look at some real estate for investing the corporate pension fund. And just before I returned, she phoned and said she was filing for divorce and that she'd shut down all the bank and credit card accounts. And I had asked my attorney to get orders giving me access to some of our money and also to make clear orders regarding when the children would be which parent, and that if they were with one parent, that parent had to let the other parent know how to reach them and things like that, which hadn't been done. So I go to my attorney's office and to sign the papers, and we were supposed to go to court a little bit later to try to get these orders, and my attorney says, I can't go to court with you today. I've been called into a case in the next county. I said, well, can't you get someone to cover for you? No, you owe me too much money. My attorney had not even done what she could have done to get money for herself from our substantial assets, much less getting any money for me. Mm-hmm. So I go back home, and by the way, we owned one car, and my then-wife had taken my set of keys to the car, even though it belonged to both of us. So I borrowed, and I get home, and my parents lived nearby, and I phoned my mother, and I said, do you know where the children are? And she said, yes. My then-wife was hiring a housekeeper to come in during the day to clean house, and she said the housekeeper's taking the children to the neighbor's house to play with the neighbor's kids. So I go there, and I get my children, take them to my parents' apartment, borrow their car, because the housekeeper that was paid by my then-wife had expressed concern to my mother that her employer, my estranged wife, was having her pack a lot of children's clothes and other things that morning, a morning at which we were supposed to be getting court orders in the afternoon. So I borrow my parents' car. I go to our medical office. I don't see our car there, so I drive to the hospital. and park in the guest parking lot, and I walk over to the doctor's parking lot, and I see our car parked there. Now, she'd taken my key, but I still had the combination to the keypad on the driver's door. So I get into the station wagon. I had a video camera. I crawl to the back of the station wagon, and sure enough, there's a lot of children's clothing. There are wedding gifts. There are other things that were not supposed to be removed from the house, and I'm getting ready to take pictures of these with the video camera, and I see my estranged wife coming out of the hospital carrying a box. So I climb back to the front of the car. I strap myself into the driver's seat. Now, at that time, when you file for divorce in California, there were automatic orders saying you shall not strike, harass, molest, hit, etc., the other person. And I naively thought that those standard orders would protect me. So she's furious to see me, in quotes, her car, even though it belonged to both of us, comes up, puts down the box, and starts punching the keypad to unlock the door. Well, I keep hitting the lock button, but she gets ahead of me, and she climbs in on top of me. Now, at that time, because of all the stress I was under, my weight was down, and I weighed about 130 pounds, and I'm just under 5 feet 9 inches, so I was very thin. She was about 4 inches shorter than me and weighed about 210 pounds. She climbs in on top of me and smashes my face down in the passenger seat while my thighs are still strapped in the normal seated position. So she then starts kicking in my lower back with her knees. She reaches into my pocket and claws around, scratching me, trying to see if I have keys in there. She then tries to grab the video cassette out of the video camera. I reached for the cell phone, and this was in 1990, and if any of your listeners have ever handled a late 1980s cell phone, you know that those are a big, heavy, blunt object. If you think of a big police person's flashlight, it's something like that. And she grabs this heavy, blunt object and begins hitting me on the side of the head and the neck. And she's a physician. She knows how to deal a lethal blow with a heavy blunt object.
Yes.
So I fling open the passenger door with my one free hand and scream for someone to call the police. Well, the only other person in the doctor's parking lot at that moment is the physician whom I had unfortunately never met at any of the hospital social events. So when he sees the chief of the OB department saying, "This man is trying to steal my car," he sees a man he's never seen before, of course he's going to believe her. So a few minutes later, two hospital security people come. They see her on top of me. She gets out, and I demand that they call the police. Several minutes later, two Long Beach police officers arrive. This is Long Beach, California.
Yes.
And they order me out of the car. And I tell them I want them to search the back of the station wagon, that I believe there might be stolen items there. We can't search without a warrant or owner's permission. I said, "I am one of the owners. You have my permission." And they didn't believe me. And they told me, "She's being very cooperative, and if you'll just leave, she won't press charges for auto theft," even though I showed the police officers the car insurance documents listing me as a co-insured. They were taking her word for everything.
And this is the problem.
I said, "I want your report to note the names of witnesses and the fact that there's blood streaming down my face. We're not taking a report from you, buddy. You're lucky we're not hauling you off to jail."
And see, that's the problem when men are abuse victims. They believe the woman, and the men are not seen as victims.
Yes, and California law at that time defined domestic violence solely as something a man does to a woman. That only changed with the Court of Appeals ruling in 2008.
Right.
So I got back into my parents' car. As I was leaving the parking lot, I saw another police officer, and I reported that I was feeling pain in my lower back and abdominal region. I drove to a neighbor's home and phoned my parents and told them what happened and said, "Don't let anybody in. Keep the children in your apartment." And then, because I had read my former wife's copies of Ms. Magazine for years, I knew that when you're the victim of an assault, you should get a police report taken, which I tried to do, and that you should get medical documentation and treatment.
And they would not take your report.
They would not take a report. So I drove to a clinic in the next county and got medical treatment, which also included, of course, the physicians documenting my injuries. I had lacerations and contusions from my groin to my head, front and back, and I had internal injuries that wound up pulling the right part of my rib cage more than an inch out of alignment, which took 6 months of physical therapy to treat.
We're going to stop right here, and we're going to take a break, and we're going to talk about this more. Stay tuned. We're going to I'm speechless. You know, it doesn't take much to make me speechless, but I'm just so sorry that you had to go through this, but I'm so appreciative that you're here telling us, and I'm sure there are probably other men listening who can identify with you. And, you know, we who just don't realize that there are so many men who are victims of abuse are just surprised by this. So we'll be right back with Stanley Green. You're listening to The Jackie Price Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Can he be so blind? We both got the same good taste. He should know when he's gone on his business trip. Can't help watching this woman without losing my grip. I wish he didn't trust me so much. I think he really trusts me. That she leads me on. I'm getting there all by myself. But just being with her all along, I can't help but hoping that he never comes home. I wish he didn't trust me so much. I think he really trusts me. Yeah.
Create your future and start a career in radio and television broadcasting. The Connecticut School of Broadcasting is the nation's oldest and largest group of broadcasting schools. Their graduates have gone on to work at major television networks and radio stations like Clear Channel, ESPN, CNN, CBS Radio, Fox, MTV, and Sirius Radio. They have 12 campuses spanning the East Coast. Contact them today. In a few months, you could be working as a broadcasting professional at a radio station or television studio. Call the Connecticut School of Broadcasting today at 1-800-TV-RADIO.
This is Blog Talk Radio, Buffalo.
Welcome back. I'm Jackie Price on Blog Talk Radio. My guest tonight is Stanley Green. He's a member of the Stop Abuse for Everyone Speakers Bureau and a survivor of domestic abuse. Our topic tonight is domestic violence against men, and the phone lines are open, 657-383-1657, 657-383-1657. If you have a question or a comment for Stanley, please give us a call. Well, Stanley, you were describing an incident of when your ex-wife attacked you and you went to the next county to get medical assistance. Did you tell the truth when you got to the hospital about how you got your injuries, or did you lie about it?
I told the truth.
Okay. Now, what was the reaction of the medical personnel?
The reaction of the physical health care providers there was very respectful and attentive. I had a completely different experience when dealing with a psychologist in a custody evaluation later on.
Tell us about that.
The custody evaluator would not ask any questions about domestic violence, and when I kept bringing it up, he said, "I'm in charge of what's going on here," and claimed that I had obsessive compulsive tendencies because of that, even though none of the psychological tests that were objective showed obsessive or compulsive tendencies.
Now, was he dealing with both you and your ex-wife?
Yes, it was the same evaluator evaluating each of us.
Okay. Now, I have to ask you, from what you've described about her outbursts and violence, does she suffer from mental illness? Because it sounds like she was crazy to me.
Well, she was actually very controlled. For example, after the attack in which she inflicted those very serious injuries on me, she was standing there very, very calmly speaking to these police officers. In other words, this was not an issue of uncontrollable anger. This was very deliberately thought out behavior by somebody who was very much in control of their behavior.
Well, that's how some of those I talked about the show Snapped earlier, and I guess there's Deadly Women episodes too, but a lot of these female criminals, it's like, what's the word? Is it bipolar or multiple personalities? I mean, it's like they go off 1 minute, and then the next minute they can, you know, act like everything's calm and they're collected and everything. So, I mean, there's got to be some kind of personality disorder there. Do you agree or
well,
what?
Well, the custody evaluation described issues with anger, manipulation, and narcissism. And she was so much in denial of any of that being true that she ordered her attorney to ask for the original psychological testing documents because she was sure that the psychologist had put her name on the results of the tests that I had taken. In other words, all the things that she was objecting to, she believed were characteristics of me.
Like he had got the reports mixed up.
Right, or that he might have deliberately switched them.
When you're describing your past abuse, does this upset you?
There's a certain element of re-traumatization in recounting these stories.
Okay. All right. Well, again, I want to say that I appreciate you coming on the show, sharing your story, because I'm sure you're helping someone listening out there. And I have to say to any man that is going through an abusive situation, you're not alone, and there is help for you. All you have to do is reach out. Don't feel that you're going to be, laughed at or humiliated, because this is real, and you need to, save yourself from this. How long did you stay with her while being violated? Because, well, it seems like she initiated the divorce. You didn't initiate divorce, did you?
She initiated it while I was out of town on business for our corporation.
Yes. How long had you been married before that? I mean, before, you know, when that happened?
About 8 years.
Okay.
And I believe, and a friend of mine who has known us for a long time, who's a psychologist, believes that it wasn't that she wanted to end the marriage, but rather she wanted me to go back into more compliant behavior.
Okay, and you were...
There had been a period where I had been very intimidated by her and was very compliant, and after I'd had some health problems and been recommended by the cardiologist to have psychological counseling, I learned to not be aggressive, but to be more assertive and to not allow myself to be intimidated, and that was upsetting to her. And so my psychologist friend thinks that the filing for divorce and cutting me off from economic assets was a change back message, an effort to intimidate me into going back into being more compliant.
Mm-hmm.
And see, I had put my career on hold to take care of our family, so I was economically very vulnerable.
Okay, and that's another form of abuse that people don't understand. She controlled the finances.
Right. And so I felt comfortable putting my career on hold. It happened when we were expecting our first child, and the senior doctor in the medical corporation we owned was diagnosed with inoperable breast cancer. So we were facing a very difficult situation, so it made sense for me to stay home and take care of the children and help with whatever aspects of the business I could. And I felt comfortable doing that, because early in the marriage, when she would come home from work, she'd talk about meeting with a patient who just had a baby a couple of weeks earlier, and of course the young mother comes into the office very bleary-eyed and tired, and then complains about how her husband would come home after work and complained that the house was a mess and supper wasn't ready, which of course made me angry, because that's fulfilling a negative stereotype about men. And my then wife would say to her patient, well, you know, with a newborn, that's 12 to 14 hours of hands-on work, plus lots of additional laundry and all the sleep deprivation. If he wants the house cleaned, he can clean it himself or hire someone, and every dollar he brings home, you earn 50 cents up, which morally I agreed with, but that happens also to be the law in a community property state. So because she had that attitude, I did not feel like I was making myself vulnerable by putting my career on hold to help out with the family and with the business.
I see. You know, Stanley, there are all sorts of avenues of help for abused women, including shelters, but there's not much for abused men. Did you ever have to leave your home after one of her violent outbursts? And if so, where did you go?
Well, I didn't leave the home, but after the incident in which I was attacked that I described, where I sustained all those injuries, I went to my parents' apartment, and I called every domestic violence shelter that I could find in the phone books of Long Beach and Los Angeles. I wasn't asking for shelter. I wasn't even asking to get into a support group. I only had one question: how do I get a police report taken? And they would say, well, we don't know what to say to a man. Well, what would you tell a woman who needs to get a police report taken? Well, we're here to help women. And they all said, we're here only to help women. And many of these programs receive state money. And in those days, the state agency that handed out domestic violence funding was operating under a law that said domestic violence was something that only a man does to a woman.
Yeah, because they didn't recognize it. And again, men probably have, this has always been happening, but they don't report it because people think it's funny and it's not a laughing matter.
Right, yeah, you think about, you know, all the different cartoons about a woman threatening a man with a rolling pin or grabbing his necktie or something like that, and that's considered a joke.
That's right. How many children do you have in total?
Two.
The little, you said, of course, the first time when you were running with the child, he asked, you know, why is mommy hitting you? Were both the children witnesses to your wife being violent towards you?
Yes. And my daughter was younger, but, yeah, she witnessed that. She also, once at a church potluck, she witnessed her mother grabbing my necktie as I tried to back away. It was the weekend the kids were supposed to be with me. We were at a church potluck. My daughter said, can I go sit with mommy? And I always had a policy that if we were at some event like church or whatever and the kids were with me but they said they wanted to sit with their mother, I would say yes. I was never going to interfere with that. So I carried my daughter's food over to the table where my ex-wife was seated. My ex-wife gets into an argument with me, and as I back away, she grabs my necktie and screams, you F blank A, at me, only she used the full words. And that's at a church potluck with our daughter and, you know, church friends and a church elder sitting right at the table.
Okay, so my question is, well, she had no shame. She did this in front of, your faith community. What did these people, did they say anything? Did they, you know, did you ever go to your pastor to talk about what was going on? I mean, it's like she had no shame. I mean.
Well, I hauled her into court over that because there was a court order that said you shall not say anything derogatory about the other parent in the presence of the children. And
yes.
I said to the judge, where I come from, you F blank A, only I use the full words in the courtroom. Where I come from, that's considered derogatory language. And one of the church friends of hers who was at the table acknowledged that she had said that, but said that I had, quotes, been aggressive. My aggression was bringing our daughter and her food over to the table when my daughter said, I want to sit with mommy. Can I sit with mommy? Anyhow, there was an incident where, so on that particular day, she wanted the children to spend part of the afternoon with her, even though it was their weekend to be with me. And she intimidated me basically into agreeing to that, even though it was disruptive to my plans and to the plans of a friend of mine who'd driven 50 miles with his two kids to spend the afternoon with the four kids together. Mm-hmm. And I said, but you need to give her a car seat. And she was over the age limit for a car seat, but she was under the weight limit for a car seat. And I had an argument with her over that. I said, she needs the car seat. And the assistant pastor took her side on it, even though I'm a licensed traffic engineer. I happen to actually know about automobile safety. And then on another occasion, she had me served with papers seeking my imprisonment for alleged arrearage of monetary child support. She had me served with those papers in the lobby of our church on a day of a special event for our son in the church service that I was going into.
So the reaction from your faith community once they found out that you were a victim of domestic violence was basically siding with your ex-wife?
Right, because she's a physician, and in our faith community, a physician is only half a step below a pastor. in being a high status position.
Unbelievable. And it's all
part of the... And also she's a woman.
I was going to say, because she's a woman.
Well, see, being an engineer is a relatively high status occupation, but being a physician is an ultra high status occupation.
I understand. Yes,
so there are class issues as well as gender issues here.
Yeah, and plus the type of neighborhood, you know, you were seemed like a upper class neighborhood too. So, well, how did the violence affect your children's feelings about you and your ex-wife?
You know, they have not talked to me about it. The time that I came to my parents' apartment, I came in and my face was bloody, and the two children, on that occasion, our son was 5, our daughter was 2.5. They were upset to see me coming in with my face all bloody, and they asked me what happened. And I lied, and I said, somebody beat me up, a stranger. They said, who? And I said, a stranger. I was lying to cover for their mother. And a couple of days later, you know, I'm not good at lying, and a couple of days later, my 5-year-old son said, Dad, what's really happening? And I made a decision that I would never lie to them again. There were times when they would ask me questions later on, and I would say, I don't want to answer that now, but when you're grown up, if you still want to know, I'll tell you.
So what's your relationship like with your children today?
Well, they're adults now, and I have a very good relationship with each of them. But she moved 1,000 miles away to a small town where she knew I couldn't work in my chosen profession, figuring I wouldn't move there, but I moved there anyhow and basically sacrificed my career in engineering and have lived in poverty ever since. But that made me available to volunteer in my kids' schools and with their youth groups. And I made the decision that it was more important for me to maintain a close involvement in my children's lives than to be the maximum money-earning machine that the state wanted me to be, because that's the traditional male role.
So what is their relationship now with their mother? Do they have a relationship with her also?
Yes, and I have seen incidents where even as young adults, she's controlling or manipulative towards them. For example, the first year when they were both in college, in other words, after the youngest had graduated from high school, so they're both in college, they're both over 18. In fact, our son is 20 and our daughter is 18, so the court orders about who's going to be with whom no longer apply, so it was completely up to them when they spend their time, where they spend it. And I said, I moved to be near them, so I still live a mile from my ex-wife, and I said, I'd be really happy if you could have dinner with me on December 24 or 25, whichever you prefer. And they said, let's have Christmas Eve dinner together. And a couple of weeks ahead, they were planning the menu. I taught them how to cook. They were talking about they wanted to cook with me. So that morning, I phoned my son. I had already started some of the things that take a long time to prepare, and then I phoned my son's cell phone to find out what time they were coming over. We can't come over. I said, what? Well, Mom paid for our airplane tickets up here, and we can't come over.
Mm.
So even though they're 18 and 20, she's using her economic power. I said to my son, do you remember 2 years ago when I used my mileage plan miles to bring you up here for Christmas break? I said, I never once suggested that you should spend more time with me than with your mother. I said, that's how respectful adults treat each other, and you're not going to learn that from your mother's family.
So when you and your wife split, did you also try to get custody of the children, or how did that, you know, what was that experience like?
It was complete hell trying to get custody. And the custody evaluator, the one who would not let me talk about domestic violence, recommended 6 more months of joint custody. We had 1 year where the children stayed in the big 4,000-square-foot house, and I would be in the house for a week, and then their mother would be in the house for a week, and the custody evaluator recommended continuing that for another 6 months. But she persuaded the judge to bring in a second custody evaluator who was just a hack for her, and even though the judge referred to that first report as the most thorough custody evaluation he had ever seen, he ordered to her sole legal and sole physical custody, which meant from that day forward I had no say whatsoever in any decisions about my children's health, education, or welfare.
You know, it's really not fair to men in these cases. It really isn't. And again, because she's a woman, it seems that people are believing her, the lies, and just ignoring, like, your injuries and the proof that you have. We're going to talk about some other things, like changes. I mean, have there, you know, been any changes since, you know, years ago with, you know, how men are treated and the resources for men? Now, it's time for us to take another break. More with Stanley Green when we return. You're listening to The Jackie Price Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Create your future and start a career in radio and television broadcasting. The Connecticut School of Broadcasting is the nation's oldest and largest group of broadcasting schools. Their graduates have gone on to work at major television networks and radio stations like Clear Channel, ESPN, CNN, CBS Radio, Fox, MTV, and Sirius Radio. They have 12 campuses spanning the East Coast. Contact them today. In a few months, you could be working as a broadcasting professional at a radio station or television studio. Call the Connecticut School of Broadcasting today at 1-800-TV-RADIO.
Here we are again. You're listening to The Jackie Price Show on Blog Talk Radio, Buffalo.
Welcome back. I'm Jackie Price on Blog Talk Radio. My guest tonight is Stanley Green. He's a member of the Stop Abuse for Everyone Speakers Bureau, and he's also a survivor of domestic abuse. And that's our topic tonight, domestic abuse against men. The phone lines are open, 657-383-1657, 657-383-1657. If you have a question or a comment for Stanley, please give us a call. You know, before we went to break, we were talking about men who find themselves in abusive situations, as you did. It seems that they're not believed, and because the woman is a woman, it seems people side with her. Have you found in this day and age, Stanley, that things are changing for men?
Things are slowly changing. It's more likely now to find organizations recognizing that there are male victims. It's somewhat more likely for media organizations to use gender-neutral or gender-inclusive language. And after a 14-year struggle, an effort which I co-launched with a colleague in 1999, the Federal Violence Against Women Act in 2013 finally got a non-discrimination clause that prohibits discrimination on the basis of sex or actual or perceived sexual orientation or gender identity in the provision of services for victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any contact with your former abuser now?
There are family occasions where we will get together. A relative was in the hospital recently, and we both were there visiting at the same time, and we were polite to each other. At our son's wedding, we were polite to each other. I don't see anything to be gained by, you know, being nasty and vicious in interactions, but I don't choose to have very many interactions.
Has she ever apologized to you?
She's never acknowledged that she did anything wrong.
Have you forgiven her?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I sometimes pray that she'll get the help she needs, but when a person doesn't acknowledge they need help, they're and a person who's never been given the gift of accountability is relatively unlikely to get help.
Mm-hmm. You're very kind. And have you remarried?
No.
No? You know, many people have trouble understanding why a woman who is being abused by her husband or boyfriend doesn't simply just leave him. And when the roles are reversed and the man is the victim of the abuse, people are even more baffled. Why don't men leave abusive relationships?
Well, they have good reason to believe that they would lose custody of their children and be unable to protect their children. When I was, prior to my appearing on ABC News 2020's first segment on abused men, in the long interviews I had with producers ahead of time, they did not want to talk about male victims losing custody, but it came up in the filming. There were 10 men, all of whom were victims of domestic violence, well documented. One of the men mentions losing custody of his children, and Lynn Scherer said, "How many of you have children?" 10 hands go up. How many of you tried to get custody of your children? 10 hands went up. How many of you got custody of your children? 0 hands.
Wow. And because she's a woman, she gets the kids, but she's the abuser.
Yeah, the attack after which I was most seriously injured, I went to court on my own. That was on a Friday. I went to court on my own on a Monday and got thrown out on a technicality. But I was back in court on Tuesday with a new attorney, and by then I had reports from 2 clinics. I had by police came to the apartment, my parents' apartment, 5 hours after the attack and took a report, and my father took photos of the injuries. So 5 days after the attack, I'm in court. The judge takes the 2 attorneys into chambers. My attorney presents photos of injuries, 2 medical reports, and a police report, and the judge laughed and said, "You have to expect 1 knockdown, drag-out fight per divorce," and he issued mutual orders. On the way out of the courtroom, my attorney turns to me and says, "You've got to drop this domestic violence thing or the judge will view you as a wimp and you'll lose custody for sure," which is what happened.
Now, see, that pisses me off. And that's exactly why I did this show tonight. And I want to continue to bring this issue out to the forefront. Now, if you had hit her back, and I want to ask you, why did you never hit her back? Because you're just a nonviolent, kind person?
I knew that if she had so much as a slightest bruise or scratch, even if it was from something I had done in self-defense, that if the police came and found her with a bruise or a scratch, I would be hauled off to jail and never see my kids again.
And that's the problem. Too many women think they have just the freedom to hit and spit and do whatever they want to people and nothing should happen. Just like when that recently football player from, I think, Florida State was in a bar and this woman attacked him, called him the N-word, and, she's a white blonde, and she attacked him, and he hit her, you could see in the video, first of all, that she attacked him, and he's trying to hold her back, and then he hit her back in self-defense, and he's the one that got in trouble, and nothing happened to her, and I'm sick and tired of these women feeling that they are entitled to put their hands on just anybody, and nothing happens to them. There has to be changes. There has to be changes. It just pisses me off. And let me just kind of, calm it down here. So once the domestic violence you endured was all out in the open, what was the reaction of your friends and family members? Because obviously your parents knew. I mean, you went to their home on several occasions abused. What did your friends and family say about this?
Well, my true friends and most of my family have been very, very supportive of me. My parents, because I've undergone a lot of economic abuse, and many of my friends, and particularly my family, have helped me get through really difficult times financially. They've made sacrifices to help me be able to live near my children and to survive the economic abuse, which is still affecting me more than 20 years later. And I've had friends be very generous. And one time, shortly after I moved up north to be near my children, I got a phone call from my attorney in California over some litigation going on down there. And I found out that a third of what little time I had remaining to be able to spend with my children had just been taken away, and I knew I didn't have the money to do an appeal. And I was just weeping. I was sitting in my office. I was a professor for 1 year, and I was sitting in the office at the university weeping, and I called a friend's home, left an unintelligible message on the answering machine, and this man who owns a business with about 20 or 30 employees came over in the middle of the afternoon, walks into my office, says, "I don't know what the problem is, but you're going home with me," and he puts his arm around me and ushers me out the door, canceled his afternoon of business, and took me to his home.
Yes. Yes.
But many men who go through this do not have that kind of emotional or logistical support from friends or family. In our culture, men are acculturated to be tough, to be the lone wolf, to be socially isolated.
And this has to change. It really has to change. What did the abuse do to you psychologically, and have you healed from what you went through?
I'm still healing. Very severe, well, I was diagnosed initially as post-traumatic stress disorder, although when the stress and trauma are ongoing, I question whether the term post really applies.
Yes.
And for the first few months, I had very intensive therapy with psychologists and psychiatrists several times a month. And I still have therapy sessions. I still have an anxiety disorder that's subsequent to this.
Yes. Yes. Stanley, what can the friends and family members of male victims of domestic violence do to be supportive?
They can believe the victim. They can help him or her gather up the kind of documentation that's needed, that is documentation of the abuse, gathering things for an emergency such as copies of children's birth certificates and insurance forms and property ownership forms, so that if the victim needs to flee on short notice, these things are ready. They can try to find programs to help and try to be assertive with those programs if they're reluctant to help.
Mm-hmm.
If the person is not treated properly by somebody who's in one of the systems that's supposed to help, whether it's law enforcement, health care, a domestic violence service provider, or clergy, they can file complaints. For example, the incident I told you about at the church, where there was the argument over whether my daughter should be in a car seat, the associate pastor was just blindly taking the side of my ex-wife, and a friend of mine who's also an engineer who was present when this was happening wrote to church officials and protested how this assistant pastor had handled that, because the victim who's going through it doesn't have the emotional strength to file these letters of complaint. I did file one complaint against the police officers who refused to take a report from me, but overall, I didn't have the energy to file complaints against the psychologists or the judges or the other parties who were acting in a very biased manner.
Yes. Are you a man of faith?
Yes.
Did you rely
on
your
faith? You know, my church as an institution let me down.
So did you rely on your faith or question your faith while being abused?
I relied on my faith. I don't consider misbehavior of church officials to be an element of what is the basis of my faith.
Right. That's between you and your God. So
right.
I guess to phrase this a little differently, did you question God why am I going through this? Or
no, I didn't have that happen, no. And you know, I some very godly people offered me a tremendous amount of help.
Okay.
Friends, you know, who are in different places in religious belief were very, very helpful. And by the way, years later, a family services agency in my faith community actually had me filmed me for a video on pastor training on domestic violence, with my doing a segment on how they should relate to male victims of domestic violence.
You know, that's wonderful, because, you know, it seems like you're in the forefront, or you're helping to, you know, make this, you know, relevant. Because for so long it's like it's hidden. It's a hidden side of domestic abuse, men being abused. And so you're bringing this to the forefront and, I guess, helping people who've never dealt with the subject, or even one to recognize that it's happening, and you have to recognize that this thing is real. There are so many just nice men out here, because I've seen it out in public. Another thing that I do, besides being a radio producer and a talk show host, I'm a flight attendant for a major airline, and I have seen some couples on my plane. The women are just so nasty to their, their men. They talk down to them, and I mean, I haven't seen any physical thing personally, not yet. But an associate of mine did. When we came on the show tonight, I was telling the incident about her seeing an Asian couple in San Francisco International Airport, and how this couple, they were arguing, and then the woman slapped them, and she went to get help, and the men that she went to, they started laughing about it. So I admire you that you're bringing this to the forefront, and what is the reaction? I mean, are you seeing that people are responsive? They want to help. Are there, you know, more organizations wanting to include help for abused men?
Yes, there is an increasing number of organizations wanting to help abused men. I've been invited to conduct trainings for social service agencies and military organizations, Native American organizations, and social workers in universities all over the U.S. and Canada to teach about serving abused men. There's a long way to go, but definitely more organizations are trying to reach out in a constructive way to help men.
Yes. A lot of times, you know, we wonder why we go through hardships, but you know, when we come out on the other end as survivors, there's a mission for us. So maybe I'm answering my own question about you. You know, unfortunately, you had to go through something ugly, but look at how many people you're going to be able to help. That's a beautiful thing.
I've been thankful to have opportunities to bring something constructive out of this very bad experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What advice do you have for men when they're dealing with an abusive woman?
Well, first of all, is to recognize that you deserve to be treated with respect. And to reach out for help. Talk to a trusted family member. Talk to a mental health professional. Reach out to an organization such as Stop Abuse for Everyone. Or you can try your local domestic violence shelter. They may be helpful and respectful to men if you're fortunate. If they're not, reach out to another organization. And talk to someone that you can trust about what's going on. But believe in yourself and believe that you deserve to be treated with respect. And if you have children, they deserve to grow up in a home where they're being protected and they're not being exposed to abuse and disrespect.
Do you worry that your children are going to repeat the cycle, that your son may become a victim or an abuser, or your daughter, you know, the same question? Are you concerned about that?
Well, when they were younger, of course, I was concerned about the long-term impacts on them. And you may have heard of a study. It's called the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study. The acronym is ACEs.
Okay,
and
no,
children who have various adverse experiences, including witnessing a parent being abused, are themselves at greater risk for a number of different types of physical or mental health problems or relationship problems. So, you know, from when my children were young, I've had concerns over how this experience would affect them.
Mm-hmm. Have you, well, they're grown now, but has it affected them? I mean, do you know that have they been in any abusive relationships, or do you think they would even tell you?
I'm confident that they have not been in abusive relationships, and of course I do everything I can to try to encourage them to, you know, be respectful and loving in relationships and to expect that they deserve to be treated with respect and love in relationships.
Okay. Okay. You seem like you're very, you have a very close relationship with your children.
Yes, and I'm very thankful for that. And that really was only possible because of great sacrifices by my family, my parents particularly, yes, and by various friends that made it possible for me to live near them despite massive economic abuse.
Yes. Are men less traumatized by domestic violence than women?
I don't think there's any evidence to that effect. The fact that it's not expected might introduce an element of trauma, for better or for worse. Unfortunately, girls and women may be acculturated to expect that they might be abused. I'm not saying that's good, but it's not. It's a great departure in our society for a man to be abused. So there's the dimension that his sexuality may be threatened by the societal stereotypes that real men don't get abused.
And we know that's a lie, you know, because men from all walks of life, all cultures, can become victims.
Right, right. Yeah, there are a lot of stereotypes out there about victims, stereotypes based on race or economic status or sex or sexual orientation or substance abuse or mental illness, and the fact is it can happen to anybody in any demographic stratum.
Yes. How do men cope after, how do most men cope with a breakup or divorce after leaving an abusive relationship? You can tell me about yourself.
Well, it varies a great deal. And it depends on whether they lose, if they have children, and whether they lose custody of their children.
Mm-hmm.
And most male victims of domestic violence who have children lose custody of their children, and that's completely devastating. But I have seen men who continue to blame themselves, or they think that their wife is going to come around, that if they're just nicer to her, she'll want to come back to them. And they don't want to be hard on her. And by being hard on her, I'm talking about making sure that the man gets his half of the assets and that he gets a fair amount of time with his children. Oh, well, I don't want to be too hard on her. So some men apply chauvinism even to their abusive spouses or ex-spouses.
Is this because of strictly because of the children, or they really love the woman, or like low self-esteem and they have like no real self-love for themselves? Because when you really love yourself, you're not going to let somebody mistreat you.
Right. I think it's often the result of low self-esteem and a misplaced chauvinism of you know, not all men, I've encountered this with some men who are victims of domestic violence, where they want to, quote, protect her, and that includes protecting her against the consequences of her own actions. I call experiencing the consequences of your actions the gift of accountability.
Stanley, why did you stay?
Well,
because of
our children. I stayed because of our children and because she had made me economically vulnerable.
Okay. All right. Can men love again after leaving an abusive woman?
Yes, and I know a number of men who have. It can be difficult, but I think especially if the man gets therapy, if he is able to rebuild strong self-esteem or he comes to recognize that he deserves a respectful, loving relationship and that he, and that goes hand in hand with his having a commitment to being respectful and loving to his partner, it can work.
And how does he rebuild his confidence? Through counseling? What are some ways, what advice would you give to someone listening who has been through something like this to rebuild their self-esteem and their character? I mean, what would you tell them to do?
Well, for one thing, there's a whole lot of stress in dealing with this, especially when you're going through the divorce. And I find really vigorous exercise is one of the more constructive ways of dealing with having a lot of the stress hormones in your body. It's a lot more constructive than alcohol and drugs.
Yeah.
And also it gives you a sense of accomplishment. So it may sound really basic, but vigorous exercise, but cultivating strong relationships with family and friends, and then finding a good therapist, a psychologist or counselor, maybe a men's support group to help you work through this and rebuild your self-esteem and your confidence.
Mm-hmm. That's very good advice. Well, it is time for our final break. More with Stanley Green when we return. You're listening to The Jackie Price Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Everything I need, ooh baby, makes any difference. I give you all my heart, girl. My sunsets anywhere. Trust in me,
trust,
baby.
Me.
You're all I want. Hey, girl, yeah, everything I need. Hey, babe,
you're my dream and my joy. My heart belongs. Sat down one day and I wrote this song, 'cause I need you in my world.
Share my life, baby.
Share.
Hey, girl, you can trust in me, girl.
Trust,
baby.
Me, girl.
You're all.
I want.
Baby, you're everything I need.
Create your future and start a career in radio and television broadcasting. The Connecticut School of Broadcasting is the nation's oldest and largest group of broadcasting schools. Their graduates have gone on to work at major television networks and radio stations like Clear Channel, ESPN, CNN, CBS Radio, Fox, MTV, and Sirius Radio. They have 12 campuses spanning the East Coast. Contact them today. In a few months, you could be working as a broadcasting professional at a radio station or television studio. Call the Connecticut School of Broadcasting today at 1-800-TV-RADIO.
You're listening to the Jackie Price Show on Blog Talk Radio, Buffalo.
Okay, welcome back. I'm Jackie Price on Blog Talk Radio. We're talking about domestic violence against men, and my guest tonight is Stanley Green. Stanley is a member of the Stop Abuse for Everyone Speakers Bureau, and he's also a survivor of domestic abuse. The phone lines are open, 657-383-1657. 657-383-1657. If you have a question or a comment for Stanley, please give us a call. Stanley, how did you become involved with the Stop Abuse for Everyone organization? And tell us what services does the organization provide for people, and how can men contact you?
The initial contact came from Phil Cook. I don't remember who, but someone put Phil Cook in touch with me quite a few years ago when he was writing the first ever book about male victims of domestic violence. That book is now out in a second edition. It's Abused Men, The Hidden Side of Domestic Violence, and I highly recommend it if you want to understand the research about male victims of domestic violence, what happens to them, and what can be done to help them. So Phil Cook got in touch with Jade Rubick, who was a university student at the time, and Jade was a survivor of domestic violence, and he started an organization called Stop Abuse for Everyone, SAFE, and eventually Phil asked me to get involved, and I helped with getting SAFE incorporated as a nonprofit corporation and was helped with the establishment of the Speakers Bureau for SAFE. And you can reach SAFE, Stop Abuse for Everyone, by phone at 661-829-6848, 661-829-6848. On the Internet, it's at stopabuseforeveryone.org. So those words are all together, stopabuseforeveryone.org. And SAFE has a speakers bureau with a wide range of experts and people of different backgrounds, including myself, who conduct trainings on gender issues in domestic violence. And it has forums where people can talk about domestic violence issues. It has links to research. It has a range of services, including where you can look for help, organizations that help abused men and other underserved demographics.
Now, I also have the information for SAFE on my website, which is JackiePrice.com, and on my Facebook page on Jackie Price on Blog Talk Radio. So, what should male victims of domestic violence to protect themselves and their children?
Well, this advice applies to all victims of domestic violence. If you're in an abusive relationship, you should have a safe place where you keep important documents such as your children's birth certificates, your birth certificate, insurance papers, including health insurance information, so that if you do need to leave suddenly and if you are able to take your children, you've got their health insurance information and birth certificates that show that you're a parent. If you can find a way to set aside money to help you, I also recommend getting in touch with your local domestic violence program, and they may help men more do these days. If they don't, I recommend that you contact Stop Abuse for Everyone to help get you in touch with a program that does help men.
Mm-hmm.
And talk to trusted family and friends, but you need a safety plan, first of all, and you need your own self-esteem to be aware that you, and if you have children, they deserve to not live in an abusive environment.
Well, we have come to, I guess, the show's end. Do you have any final words of encouragement to anyone listening who may be a victim of domestic violence, especially men, Stanley?
Yes, and you can rebuild a good life after you leave the abusive relationship. And you can protect your children if you have children. You can move forward with family and friends. You may eventually find a new partner, although you shouldn't make finding a new partner your first thing. You need to take care of yourself first. And just remember, you deserve to be treated with respect.
Mm-hmm. Stanley, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight to share your story and for all you do to help the victims of domestic violence become whole again. You're very special, and it's been an honor to speak with you. Thank you for coming on my show tonight.
You're welcome, Jackie, and it's been a pleasure and a privilege to work with you on this.
You're very kind. Okay, family, I just want to thank you so much for listening, and, you know, I love you for listening. Have a wonderful and safe and blessed week, and I'll see you next Wednesday, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., right here on Blog Talk Radio.